Elizabeth Harrington, Reel 3.
You told me your IS son was
married. Yeah, they were the Bihl caste, B-H-I-L.
What does that mean?
Well, all India is castes. There are Brahmins, there are untouchables, there are outcasts, there are Bihl castes, there are umpteen million castes, and they don't overlap. And the man who cleaned out your toilet, he was a definite untouchable. If his shadow went on any of the other servants' food, that food was immediately thrown away. And Rustam Khan, my husband, had a kind of a valley-come-soldier, you know. He was a Muslim, and of course he couldn't bear the ayah, but he didn't have anything much to do with us. He was my husband's man. Though he did take me to his house one day, and he had two wives. One he said was the old one, she was at least 20, and the other one was a young girl, and he had a couple of sons. And this was my first venture out. He asked me if I'd like to go to his house. He spoke quite good English, and I said yes I would, and it was an honour to go. And it was two kind of mutty rooms, he of course being a soldier, and two kind of mutty rooms and beaten floor, and she was cooking on a fire and she was making chapatis. And of course they had their they didn't have a burqa on because I was a woman, but they had their saris sort of over their heads because it was not considered the thing to white women to let them go. And I was appalled. There was just a charpoy, a string bed, and the floor, and but he was quite well off, really. But I was pretty horrified. And then Aya and I, how she became my servant, my husband had engaged a cook who was an oldish fella, but he'd been cook for a long time. And then he died. And when he died, he said to my husband, "Oh, Sab, the Babas," he had children with my husband. So my husband said yes, he would look after the children. And then one day I was going to the dairy. We had a very modern dairy across the Maidan, run by a very modern Indian, and it was very clean and lovely. And I was going over the Maidan, and I saw this woman coming over the Maidan, and she was being well beaten up by a fellow. Well, I wasn't quite versed in the arts of India yet, and so I said to Advani, "Why is he giving that woman a good hiding?" "Oh, it's all right," he said, "she owes him 10 rupees. Well, that was a fortune. And I said, "10 rupees?" He said, "Yes, she's the wife of your cook who died, and that is the money for the funeral pyre, you see, and she hasn't paid it." Well, of course, she was starving to death. How could she pay it? She had three little children. So I said, "You come with me." And we paid the 10 chips. And I got somebody who was pretty filthy, couldn't speak a word of English. She had a terrible scar here. And she was terrible scar. Somebody had given her a good wallop. And her back was pretty bad where she had this beating. So I said, "You sit down there." And of course she sat down with her sari right over her head. And then I said to myself, "Well, maybe I can make her into something," which I did. It was after the 3 years, she was speaking English and we were just like peas in a pod. And we paid her a wage, naturally. And I paid the 10 chips in the first place, and she got shot at the Bunyip bloke. And then she asked us to... She had a son who was 14. And Chumpa, the little girl, was about 12. And they got married. And she asked us to go to the wedding, which was an unusual honour. And it was in the bazaar. Well, you really... And truly, you weren't allowed in the bazaar very often because you just weren't. But we went, I often used to go to the bazaar. I used to buy fruit in the bazaar, and I used to push the Brahmin bulls out of the way because they used to pinch the fruit off the stalls, you know, and they had to give them to them because they were holy. And well, I learned a lot down in the bazaar. And we went to this wedding. It was very, very interesting. And we took photographs after. We've got the photographs, I don't know where, but we took photographs of them all. Well, then Aya, she wouldn't leave me. She just wouldn't leave me. And, well, we just grew to like one another. And she worshipped my kids. And if you ever wanted to find a child and give him a good wallop, you can bet your life he was up the Aya skirt, because she had a kirtle on that was all yards and yards of stuff, a Cindy kirtle in bright red and blues and that, and a little Cindy blouse on. I used to buy her saris, and she was always clean and spotless, you know. And, well, we got on very well. And one day, there was a woman, she was a Sergeant Major's wife, and she was a bit of a devil. And she used to lock everything up. Tea, everything. You name it, she locked it up. Well, there was always loose wallers about, thieves. And they used to cover themselves with cheetah fat, because the dogs that you had, we had three dogs, wouldn't touch a thief with cheetah fat on him. And if you caught him, he'd slip right through your fingers because he was covered in cheetah fat. And they used to come in and rob now and again when they felt like it. And this woman, she locked everything up. She wasn't very good to the servants, and she locked it all up. And one day she came screaming into the house, and I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "Will you lend me a teapot?" So I said, "Yes, I'd lend her a teapot." And she hadn't even got a teapot. They'd come in at night. You never hear them. And they come in at night, and they'd taken everything. And she had to go down to the thieves' bazaar and buy it all back. She saw it down there, teapot and all. But I was never robbed, because my Aya explained to me one day. I asked her why Mrs. Davis was robbed, and she said, because she locks things up. So I said, well, why does she lock things up? Why shouldn't she lock things up? So she said, well, Mum Sahib, it's like this. I have to keep the people of my family out of what you leave or what you give me, because one day I might be out of work, and I would want to be kept too. And she said, if there is everything locked up and nothing to touch, how can we live? So I said, well, the best thing you can do is to remember that I've got to live, and not to steal from me, but you can have, within reason, whatever you would have. And she said, "Acha, Mum Sahib, thank you." And I never had a thief in my house, not ever, any time, but many others did. And they used to say that they could tickle your nose or something, and you'd roll over, and they'd take the blanket from under you. I have seen and heard stories of how the rifles were stolen. They'd take the rifles, and they were chained up in the middle of the room, and nobody ever heard them. Not the Pathans. They were really something. They'd take the shirt off your back, and you'd never feel it go. But I was very, very lucky. I didn't have it done. And when we went from Hyderabad up to Quetta, again on the train, miles and miles and miles, 5,000 miles, I think, or something like that, I couldn't take my Aya, because she was a Beale caste. She would die of cold. Quetta was below zero at night and up in the morning, and I couldn't take her. And I think that was one of the most heartbreaking days of my life. But when the earthquake was over, I went back down to the Sindh. I didn't want to go home in the refugee boat. And I went back down to the Sindh. And to this day, I do not know how, why, or when. There was no communication at all. There was nothing like there is today. There was no wireless. There was no nothing. And yet when I got to the other end in Hyderabad Sindh and nobody knew I was coming, there she was sitting on the railway station. It's fantastic again. It's unbelievable. I had gone miles and miles away. Nobody knew how many women were coming down. Nobody knew that I was to be among the party because it was all hush-hush because the pass was cracked and the Pathans were out looking for us. Nobody knew. And yet she was sitting on the station. How do you make that out? I can't understand it. And she died in my arms. And I was glad. I've never forgotten her. And I never will. I don't know what she died of because I was very stupid. I couldn't speak the language. I could only speak several little words that didn't count. And I was very stupid. I was too young and I didn't learn the language. But I don't know what she died of, but I screamed for a doctor. And I had an Anglo-Indian friend who was a doctor, and he came and he stood back and he said, it's no use. And she was lying on the charpoy and she just died. But I think, in my own mind, that it could have been a perforated appendix. I had that feeling, but she died. And then, of course, I took the boy on and the girl. You know, the boy, the couple that got married. I took them because... Yeah, oh yes, because there were still children to bring up and that was that. But I'll never forget her. She was my first friend. She was coloured. She was a Beale. We weren't supposed to mix with the coloured people. But she was definitely my friend. If she saw me have a fight with my husband, which I did quite regularly, she'd hide the bicycle. Because she knew that if I was in a temper, I'd go for a bike ride. And if it was very, very hot, too hot to go, she'd hide my topi. Or she'd hide my bike. And I was only about 6 stone, and all I ever wore was little shirt and shorts, you know, khaki, and she'd hide everything. And then she'd say, Mam, shall I have a cup of tea? And we'd, you know, I'd sort of scream at her and she'd scream at me, and the children, she worshipped the children, and she'd if I was in a paddy with the children, she'd put them up a skirt, or behind her skirt, and she'd stand there. And I'd say, have you seen them then? Nay, Mam Sahib. And there she'd be standing up against the wall and the kids would be under her skirts, you see. She was marvellous. She got fat and she learned English. And she learned how to set a table. She was purely native when I took her. And in that short time, she became... Well, she was cleverer than I, wasn't she? She learned English, didn't she? And as I say, and then I made friends with the Anglo-Indians. We weren't allowed to. We were ostracised. We never saw the officers. Only when there was a dance in the sergeant's mess and the officers were invited. We never saw the officers. We just saw them on parade. We saw the officers' wives. They used to come and visit. But not like they did in England. In England, they came and visited because they were, more or less had to see if you were my type. But the officers' wives in India didn't bother you. You saw them, and they came to the dances sometimes, but a great gulf stretched between thee and me. And you saw the wives of... Well, I mixed with the Anglo-Indians, and I learned... how to eat, sounds funny, doesn't it? And how to conduct myself, and how a table should be set. In fact, I'd never seen a table set like it, finger bowls and the lot. And beautifully mannered, and I learned a lot. There was a white girl married to a dark fellow. Well, I don't know how they lived, these poor souls, because they were completely ostracised and there weren't very many women there. And Dr. Lawrence's wife, I only lived half a mile from them. I never saw her. She was white. And he was a very nice doctor. Dr. Tallis was black. I hated him. He was a horrible man. when I was having my baby. He stood there in the middle of the doorway and smoked a cigarette. Yeah. And there was a white woman in charge of the hospital, and there was a white woman missionary. I used to go up to the mission a lot and help her. And there was my friends across the Maidan, another doctor, Dr. Cadiro, and his wife was white. She was a lady. And he had some very nice daughters. It was through them that I gave my children a good schooling, because they had their children in good schools, you see.
What did your friends, your British friends in India, think of you associating with Anglo-Indians?
I should hate to have to tell you. I was practically ostracised myself. They just didn't want to know you. You were a nigger lover. I think it must have been something like America and the Deep South, because at that time, it wasn't done. You didn't have them in your houses. You only spoke to the doctor. And it was a miracle if they played tennis with you. And I just can't describe it. And yet, when you went to their houses, they had the most beautiful furniture. They made the most beautiful dresses. They had their own community, the Anglo-Indian community. They were well-bred, not all of them, but some of them. And the girls were beautiful. And they spoke with a Welsh accent, but they spoke beautifully. They had been to beautiful country schools. And Dr. Cadiro's wife used to take me shooting. We used to shoot pig. And I just liked them.
How did the British wives let you know what they thought of your behaviour?
Oh, in no uncertain terms. They'd just tell you. Or they wouldn't tell you, they wouldn't talk to you.
Would that mean then that you would have to miss out on some of their parties?
No, you didn't miss out. You didn't get shunned. But you were not encouraged. You were on the veranda talking to the doctor, you'd be up to some mischief. But you wouldn't be, but it was just one of those things. But I can't describe what India was like in those days. You did not mix with the natives. We had a very, very nice grocer, put it that way, Chunilal Chadha, a big, I don't know whether he was a Hindu or Bengali. I don't know what he was. He kept a store. And it was in the cantonment. Now, when I came down from the earthquake, I'd been a long time in a closed compartment with my kids, and the water had run out. And we were hungry. I'd been on this refugee train, wasn't very funny. Dead on it, piled up high, dying. Oh, everybody. Anyway, we finally, when the water ran out, we finally got to a place called Sucker. It was so many miles, about 200 miles from where we were going to Hyderabad Sindh. And I'd always talked to Chunilal Chadha. I hadn't associated with him to cause gossip or anything. I'd talked to him as a big fat old, I don't know, I think he must have been a Bengali or something. And on the station, I looked because I wanted to go and get water. But you see, there was water and water, and most of the stations didn't have it, the real water. And all of a sudden, I saw a big, fat, waddling old figure that I knew. And I leapt out of that train miles down, and I said, "Oh, Chunilal, the Babas, we've got no water." And I put both arms around his neck, a thing that nobody ever did. You should have seen the look on the faces. And he said, "Stick on, Mansab, you shall have water." And he gave us a great big fat bun with a fried egg in it and water. And, you know, he was so helpful and kind. Well, how could you dislike people like that? You couldn't not associate when you went every day to the shop to get things. And my friends, I first met them by going to Menora. We had a holiday bungalow there. You shared it with a lot of others, but you had a holiday bungalow, and you went by the sea. And I met a girl down there who was half white, and her husband was on the beach. I forget what they called it, on the sea, Port Harbour, the harbour mouth. And he was quite somebody there, but he was dark. He was a half caste too. And we formed a friendship. And she asked me to her house, so I went. And then her friends, they were a close clan, asked them to our house. And Dr. Van Ross was a dark man, but he was our doctor. And he asked me to his friends to tennis parties. I first learned how to peel a peach there. Yeah. And I was petrified with fright when I was asked, because I was the guest and the Kansama served me first, and don't think I ate anything that day. You see, they taught me. When I came back to England, oh my Lord, it was terrible. I had lived a different life. I had lived as the Colonel's lady. And it was very hard to come back to being Judy O'Grady. In fact, I started at 6 o'clock in the morning and I finished at 9 at night. I was still going it. So you see, and for the children, they went to good schools. It taught them. They went to the Karachi St. Joseph's. We weren't Catholics, but they went there because Mrs. Kadira helped me get them in, because after the earthquake, they wouldn't sleep where there was beams. So the Reverend Mother said she would take them for me. And we paid a reduced fee, thanks to my friends. Whether my friends paid the rest of the fee, I never to this day have known. And it's a very funny thing. I was having a baby after I got back, and I went up here to have the baby. And when I had had the baby and was in the ward, I looked at one of the girls and I said, "What's your name?" And she said, "Thaddeus." And I said, "Are you any relation to Nellie Thaddeus?" "Oh yes," she said, "that's my auntie." Now work that one out. It was her auntie in Karachi, and she'd come over here to learn to be a nurse. And of course she came home. And I don't write to them now, because since partition, we haven't had any correspondence. I don't know what's happened to them. I would like to know. I did get one letter from Dr. Van Ross. He married and he has two children. But after the partition, the Indian Navy busted up, didn't it? And I don't know what happened.
I often hear stories about the way the Europeans treated the Indians and the Anglo-Indians. Things like pushing them off the pavement.
Well, and so you must remember that I lived in a small community. There weren't any pavements. But I do know that Dr. Lawrence had a wife, a white wife. And I know that I was there 3 years and I never saw that white wife. Now, I can't possibly imagine anything worse. And I do know that Dr. Cadero had two daughters and two sons, and they went to very good schools up country. And my harbour port people were quite well-to-do in their houses. And I also know that this poor girl who was married to this dark fellow, I forget what he did, he was a very nice fellow, they had nothing to do with her. That is all I know, that they didn't have anything to do with anybody. And as I told you before, I took five children after the earthquake. I don't know how I got them. I know the mother was killed and the father had a leg off, but I don't know how I got them. I might have got them through my daughter or somebody like that. I just don't know. But I took them with me into my house. And there was a Christmas party coming on. And you must remember that nobody, not even the doctor, was invited into the sergeant's mess, only on very rare occasions. And he was a doctor. And I took these children and I asked if they could go to the Christmas party because I had them in my house. And I said, well, I wouldn't go. My children wouldn't go unless they went. And they did invite them in. And it was such an occasion. You'd have thought that it was a miracle. Five little dark children, Anglo-Indian children. But they did take them in the mess. And it was Christmas. But it was never done. The doctor came in and played tennis and was there sometimes. But they had their community and you had yours, even if you were only a sergeant or a quartermaster's wife. But people would sort of look at you when you, where's Mrs. Harrington? Oh, I expect she's over at the Cadeiros. And it was disparaging voice and not done. And when I took my eye out, and that woman who was robbed, she'd come up and she'd say, where's the eye today then? You know, and when I used to belt down to the bazaar and into the place where the eye was and sit in the courtyard and have a natter with them all on the charpoys, oh dear, wasn't done.
Did your husband think of
your... Oh, he didn't bother. He just let me do what I did, and he was friendly with the Cadeiros, and he was friendly with Dr. Van Ross, and he was friendly with the others. No, he didn't bother. He is not a snob, and he isn't an Indian snob either. He had lots of friends as well. And we just treated the Indian people as we would treat you or the rest of our people. We just thought they were people. Mind you, there are a lot of things in India that you don't tolerate in your mind. I mean, I had four boys, you see. Three boys. And I, of course, to an Indian mind, was really somebody. But you must remember, I was only about 6 stone, a little skinny thing. And I remember going out country one day with the Cadeiros, and we went pig shooting, and we went into a jungle village, and they had me stripped because they didn't believe the women that I could have four boys and I'd be so skinny, and they didn't believe. Boy, that was a pretty experience, you know. But I can't describe the ordinary Indian mind. I went to the mission several times to help, and of course the mission had a hospital. Well, Oxford educated men acted in such a way that you'd never believe it. It just wasn't feasible. They, when they came home, they were completely Indian again, and to an Indian, a woman is a chattel. And if she has a baby girl, she was dirty, and they didn't count. If she had a boy, oh boy. But she went out those days, I'm talking about the servant type, went out into a cowshed and had the baby, and the old midwife came along with a bit of glass and cut the cord.